And and then you can also see how we would proceed technically with generating a third year, and how we also then look at reducing budget baselines before we start the process of looking at where we would add or how we could move around. We look at tracing away for activities that have been completed, and also where wastage is taking place. The role players, I'm not going to go through all of those. I'm sure everyone is okay with that. Then, essentially, I don't think I need to say much here either. This is really just about internally for us, the work that is done in order for the executive ultimately to table the main budget as well as the NPDPS and the adjustment budget. The Moneyball Amendment Act puts in place the procedures which allow amendments of Moneyball, and then essentially to note, which changes the budget process quite somewhat, is that it all starts off with the Budget Review and Recommendation Report, which we are seeing since yesterday, daily now. And that then should inform us as technical people in this process of the important aspects or considerations of the committee in this respect, and it evaluates the performance, particularly of government departments and their expenditure. This is an early warning to us. We do need to consider that then within the context of the division of revenue that is passed subsequent to the tailing of the NPDPS, and then essentially at the time of the budget, we do need to indicate by way of a report as to how we have been able to respond to all of the issues raised in the budget review and recommendation report, and any other reports. This is just a graphical, a visual depiction of the process, and essentially it's divided into what government is doing, generally speaking, is under policy review. Government is a collective, then departments and what they are doing in line departments, and then essentially what is happening in Parliament. I'm not so sure I need go through everything, just perhaps to point out that it is interesting to note that essentially from the executive side, one starts off with reviews and evaluations, etc., in April and so on, and departments start planning in line with that. But however, at that same time, we are still finishing off the process related to the budget that has already been proposed in the previous session. So there's a slight lag between the two processes. Thank you.
Previously, that was a prerogative of the Minister of Finance. money laws amendment act when it was approved not have been, shouldn't it have led to a change in the constitution itself, which it didn't?
In terms of the functional approach to budgeting, I think, you know, also remember that it is the first year in which we're doing it, so we are realizing some benefits already, but obviously as we go along, I think, you know, next year and the year thereafter, I think the benefits will become even more apparent. But essentially, what this does is it allows us in the internal process to look at the trade-off in light of the outcomes of a particular function. So those functions are actually the functions of the United Nations has government function classifications, and essentially we've taken those functional classifications and modified them for our own purposes. So, for example, in the United Nations classification, economic affairs is just one broad category, but we've divided it into two categories to more meaningfully address the budgeting aspect. What it means then is instead of just focusing on one vote, and then automatically the focus becomes more towards output than outcomes. We've now, if we look at the function, we take, if I take, for example, the, you know, education, then we'll take a higher education and training department and the Department of Basic Education. We'll look at all the various entities, UMAMUSI, et cetera. And then we look at what are the relevant outcomes. Looking at the delivery agreement, what are the outputs that I'm meant to be talking to there? And then looking holistically at this group as it's functioning in terms of how the allocations then speak to the relevant outputs that are meant to attain the outcomes. So, and I think particularly for us, it's allowed us to bring the entities into the discussion in a far more meaningful way. Perhaps if I can give a concrete or another example just to make it clear. In the Treasury vote, we have the Neighbourhood Development Partnership Grant, which I'm sure members will know is actually for support for municipalities. In terms of the functional classification, the Treasury vote, most of it, falls within an administrative function. But the Neighbourhood Development Partnership Grant, the function of that actually goes to the function of human settlements and communities. And so if, for example, in the budgeting process we see some savings in the Neighbourhood Development Partnership Grant, because that then lies in that function, it means that those savings cannot be used for other Treasury business because that is in a different function. We would be looking at how those savings then could be effective for that same particular function. So we're looking at things slightly differently. And clearly, you know, we haven't lost the entirely, it's not like we've thrown the lady out of the bathwater. We haven't lost the vote focus, and that will always be there. And we've had some teething problems in terms of the fact that, you know, it's new, and also that essentially we work within the function, but ultimately we must bring it back to a particular vote and main division within the vote in terms of the PFMA. Then in terms of the question around whether or not the constitution should be changed, I'm going to pass on that one because I'm not a legal person and I wouldn't like to express my opinion.
Any last questions to have a member before we move to the next presentation? None. Can we move all the question at the table?
It's not a question but except it's a comment, just to say the question that
my colleague is asking the, I'm glad the fellow says they can't respond to this question. You're supposed to respond to the question. As a member of parliament, because the money bill, that didn't come from the executive. It's a parliamentary, what we call it, act that was passed by us for our interest. Maybe some of the things that we need to look at, whether we need them going forward.
Of responding to the act are experiencing some teething problems, and there are some things which I think we also need to consider further. We had a meeting yesterday with the secretaries of committees to look at the time schedule. In particular, for example, in processing the NPDES and the particularly the Division of Revenue and Income Force, there are some particular problematic timing there. We were discussing the logistics of how to get around that. There are various options I think that we need to explore even just on our side. So something that we were wondering about as well is to what extent and which information that is contained within, not in, within the NPCS itself, but perhaps within the adjustment process, we could actually, make public before the changing of the NPCS. So that's something I think that we need to go and probe a bit further. But I think particularly the consultation process and the timeline for the consultation process is problematic.
I think it's important that I raise this from the FSP side in terms of the process. The process that responds to the money bill amendment and its impact on the budget process actually does create a problem for us in terms of our own input into the process. For example, I can say right now that we are expected to make a submission on Friday, this Friday, and we only get to know about what is on the MTBPS tomorrow. Now, that creates a very big problem for us, but it's something that we have to discuss with the Treasury, but perhaps maybe the committee also could actually assist by creating a process where the Commission can get maybe access to this, just to give us a little bit of space to actually respond. We do understand the time frame that Parliament has to work with, and it is a problem for us in terms of time.
Your challenges are not at the FSC. It's not only you that experience any large challenges in implementing this act. I think the majority of parliamentary committees as well are challenged, but I think as we move on, we will be able to address some of these challenges, because some of them have been through our parliamentary program. No one has ever explained to me why budget is tabled in February or why parliament opens in February. No one has ever explained to me why MTPPS is tabled towards the end of October when the parliament adjourns in November. So all those things I think we will discuss then as parliamentarians and see how we move out of those challenges. Thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to make one comment. Just in terms, I mean, exactly to connect to this option, but in terms of the October date, one of the factors to be in consideration here is that if you want to take the mid-year information from departments, in other words, the know what they've spent for the first 6 months, then that puts one at the end of September, which essentially means if you want that information contained in your documents, you can't move. You have to have it in October for the earliest. But not, I'm not saying that, you know, obviously anything is subject to change, but that is a consideration.
Thank you, Shepard. I just want to comment on your comment regarding the timing. The annual financial year of the country starts the 1st of April, and therefore I would assume that that's why we have it in February. But having said that, I suppose there's no reason why it needs to start in April. So maybe we should have them today. Thanks,
Chair. Okay, thank you. Can we move to the next presentation? And I remember this meeting or this workshop is a joint session of four committees. So we will change faces from this chair now and again. Don't be surprised when you see Mr. Deputy chairing the second session and somebody else dealing with the other session. At this point, I will hand over to Honorable Deputy to take us through the next presentation. The next session, please.
With our board, you have our board, the two of you have our board for the whole world. Now, thank you, all the members. Thank you, Co-Chair. No program is cast in stone. It can be amended. Secondly, Section 40 of the PFMA, Section 41 E and F, indicates when annual reports are to be tabled. If they stick to the time frames of the PFMA, it will assist Treasury to table the MPP assignment. I did a study of that since last Tuesday evening and report back this afternoon to a specific structure that meets at 4 o'clock. It can be done, and we request the Parliament to review the program starting in January and ending maybe the first week in December. If the schools can do it, then we can do it. If the teachers can do it, who are committed, then we can do it. That's my input on that. MPPBS, Mr. Charles Scott.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Just a slight amendment to the way I'll be presenting, because you see my name is twice on the agenda. I'm going to go through the fiscal framework first, and then as part of the same presentation, go on to what you can find in the MTBGS. So it's all in the same document that you've been given. Okay, so just as a starting point, we need to know and understand what fiscal policy is actually all about before we can determine the fiscal framework for the MTF. Fiscal policy is about the sustainable management of revenue, expenditure, debt, so all elements of public finance, in the context of a dynamic and constantly changing global and domestic economic environment. And when I talk about sustainable management, that means that the social programs or the infrastructure programs that we are spending on today, that we are financing today, do not create an unnecessary burden on future generations. So, you know, that we shouldn't be financing social programs today through debt, ideally, because it is our children and our children's children that will be paying off that debt, but yet not necessarily receiving the benefit from those social grant payments that happen on a monthly basis. Whereas if we're financing a road from debt, hopefully our future generations are still using that road, so it's fine if they're still paying off the debt on that road. So how do we determine the fiscal framework? Our starting point is the baseline. So if if we just use the 2010 MTF as an example, so what we tabled in February, so that's the 3 years starting 2010-11 moving to 2012-13. To construct a new baseline for our new outer year, which is 2013-14, we look at what we allocated in February, and then we grow the baseline by a factor determined by public finance and the budget office. This is reflective of both what we expect inflation to be in 2013-14, as well as what we expect economic growth to be. We then undergo quite a rigorous analysis on what is contained in that baseline. So we see whether there are programs that have come to an end in departments, programs that might need to be extended over an additional year, and then we consider if we need to add more money to the baseline or if we can strip some money out and find savings to consolidate the system. So as I said, for the 2011 MTF, we find ourselves in quite a different situation. We are under fiscal constraints, so we would be looking for as much savings as possible to reprioritize. I apologize for that. I'll ask the office as soon as I get back to make a change to that. I did give them this version of the presentation. I'm not sure what happened in the printing of it. Okay, I apologize for that. I'll amend it as soon as I get back to the office. So as I said, we find ourselves in quite a constrained fiscal environment now, so we'd be looking to finding as much savings as possible to reprioritize to programs that are aligned to the 12 outcomes as agreed by the presidency. Once you determine the baseline, we then need to consider the dynamic and constantly changing global and domestic economic environment that I spoke of. So we update the macroeconomic forecast every 3 months, and this is in line with the release of the quarterly bulletin by the South African Reserve Bank. Fiscal policy at the National Treasury is responsible for providing forecasts on government elements and contributions to gross domestic product. So this includes things like what we think is going to happen to transfers to households, government consumption expenditure, government investment expenditure, transfers to the rest of the world, and expenditure on wages and non-wage components. So after the budget in February, we will update the macroeconomic forecast 3 times. So that's in March, June, and then in September. The September numbers are what is published in the NPPS. And then we'll update them once more for the release of the December quarterly bulletin, and that is what is published in the February budget. Included in the fiscal framework are real GDP growth forecasts, which then together with GDP inflation gives us our nominal GDP forecast, what we think inflation is going to be, so consumer price inflation, and then the CPI index, which is what we use to deflate government expenditure to determine what real government expenditure is doing. Once we have our macroeconomic context, we can then move on to determining our revenue forecast. This is determined by what is called the Revenue Analysis Working Committee, and that is made up of representatives from the Budget Office, Macroeconomic Forecasting and Modelling, Tax Policy, the South African Revenue Services, and the South African Reserve Bank. And occasionally, Statistics South Africa will also sit in on that forum. In this forum, we discuss our ideas on what economic growth is going to be and then the performance of the major tax categories. And then we come up with our forecast for the next 3 years. Once we have how much money we're going to be getting, we then can determine how much more money we can spend. And this is when we determine our non-interest expenditure envelope. So as I already spoke about, we've got the baseline, we have our We then make adjustments for the contingency reserve, and then through the MTEC discussions and the medium-term expenditure committee discussions with departments, we get an understanding of where departments feel they've been underfunded or they've got new programs that need to be funded, and then we determine what additional funding we will be able to provide given the economic context and our ability to access debt, and whether accessing that debt is going to be in line with the sustainable management of the fiscus. So once we have our non-interest expenditure through the MTEC process, we then can determine what the budget balance is going to be. The framework is then sent to our assets and liabilities management unit, and they will tell us how much interest we will be paying on our debt. This, of course, then can, if it's higher than what we tabled previously, that can then change the budget balance, even if it's lower. But as far as I'm aware, they only go through one or two iterations in the process of determining interest costs on debt. Of course, there can be several iterations given how it's a circular equation. So then we have to check that the overall budget position is credible, and this means that we need to ensure that departments can still cover what they need to spend on despite any changes in inflation. So we need to ensure that they can maintain the purchasing power of expenditure, and that government expenditure remains at a constant GDP ratio. And we can determine whether we want that ratio to rise over the period or come down over the period, depending on what we feel is going to happen in the economic environment. If we feel that economic growth is going to be much lower than we've seen in previous years, then we might want to stimulate the economy by raising expenditure to GDP over the forecast period. If we see that GDP will be performing above its potential or above what the expectations are, then we might want to leave expenditure constant or bring it down slightly to allow more space for the private sector to step in and invest. And then, as I mentioned earlier, growth in revenue should also be reflective of what's happening in the economy, and debt management should also, you know, what we think is going to happen to interest rates and real growth. Okay, so then we've got the fiscal framework, and now we can work on the medium-term budget policy statement. I've just gone briefly through what you can find in each chapter of the document. If you need more information, of course, you can ask some questions afterwards. So there are four chapters in the document. The first gives you the overview and policy themes. Second chapter is the economic policy and outlook, including our macroeconomic forecast that we use to inform the fiscal framework. Chapter three is fiscal policy and trends, and this includes our fiscal policy stance over the medium-term expenditure framework, as well as our expectations on revenue expenditure and debt, and then the budget balance. Chapter 4 discusses the medium-term expenditure priorities and the division of revenue. And then in Annexure A, we usually have two tables, one for the outcomes of national expenditure and one for outcomes of provincial expenditure for the previous fiscal year. And then, of course, the glossary, which contains definitions of any terms that people are unsure of. I've also included, for your reference, just an illustration of how government accounts are structured. In February 2009, we started reporting the budget balance at the consolidated government level, whereas previously we'd only reported at the national government level. So this shows you how we get from national government to the consolidated government accounts. And then if you continue to add local government, you get to general government. And then adding the non-financial public enterprises or the state-owned enterprises, you get to the public sector, and that's the public sector borrowing requirement that is often also talked about during the budget. And then it's just the same diagram written out in words if anyone is interested. And thank you. Anyone have any questions?
If in the hard copy, four slides are not. Yes, so you will have to redo the whole document, presume already 10 minutes left. Thank you, other members. questions? We should start. It seems to me a good lecture. The students don't ask questions. All those in voting?
Thank you, Chef, and thank you for this economic lesson. But what to me was not very clear, if you could repeat, you know, the process is about in instances where you think that the GDP is not going to perform or going to overperform. I could just get a repetition of that. I didn't get the process proper. Thank you.
Anyone else? None?
Okay, so we in South Africa follow what's called a counter-cyclical fiscal stance, which means that government will stimulate the economy when the economy is performing below its long-run trend or is in a recession. And we saw that in 2009-10 when we had a very big under-collection in revenue. We were affected by the financial crisis that happened in the global economy. Government spending went up, and we financed that through additional debt. As we see the economy recovering, we would want to make additional space for the private sector to step in and invest and create employment, and rather save the revenue that we are getting for the next crisis that may hit. So that's what I mean by saying that when we see GDP is going to start to underperform over what we've seen in the previous year, we may choose to stimulate the economy a bit more, and when we, by increasing government expenditure, and when we see that GDP is going to perform much better than we've seen in previous years, we may choose to either leave expenditure constant as a percent of GDP, or bring it down slowly over the next few years, and rather save that money for a future crisis when we may need to stimulate the economy.
The Monetary Amendment Procedure Act states that National Treasury must table a revised fiscal framework together with the NCBPS. I just want to check what systems or processes do you employ in revising the fiscal framework?
That's when I spoke about the new baseline for the outer year and then the interrogation of the existing baseline to see whether there are programs that have come to an end or programs that were underfunded or new programs that need to be implemented or if programs need to be extended longer than what was originally budgeted for. We then relook at our revenue forecast for the 3 years, including the 2 years in the previous medium-term expenditure framework. We also consider our forecasts on the macroeconomic side for our existing years as well as the new outer year. So that all of that is effectively a revised fiscal framework that we table with the NCBPS.
Thank you. Any more questions? Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Matthew from Operating. I outlined some information on when looking at the forecast because you refer to the next generation, the long term, when the next generation will be involved in servicing you make an example of a long-term project. Do you, in your forecast, somehow look at the financing method that maybe the taxpayers will have to contribute this much, another financing sector, let's say the private sector will come up with this month. You also have this financial institutions within future government financing institutions, do you look at the percentages of saying the financing method will be like this according to percentages, or do you just say we know we have this revenue from the taxpayers and that's all, whatever happens we'll see when we can service our debt? Thank you.
We certainly do consider the long-term financing requirements of our debt. There are several options available to government to finance debt. We can raise taxes. We can lower expenditure as a percent of GDP and use those savings to then reduce our debt burden. We also have the option to roll over our debt. So if we have, let's say, a 10-year government bond, and we see that, okay, we still need that financing, but now we've only got 1 year left on it, we can extend the contract or refinance using other debt instruments. The biggest issue on the sustainability side, though, is that our revenue is sufficient to cover interest costs on whatever our debt burden is. So as like any household credit card, your first call on your salary is your interest on your debt. We then want to be sure that we can cover day-to-day expenditures, so like textbooks, medicines, salaries for public sector employees, and then we would get debt financing, preferably only for infrastructure expenditure. We don't go into as much detail at this stage as determining what percentage is covered by company income tax, personal income tax. We are, however, very aware that this is something that we need to be focusing more on, especially now that we have an engagement with Parliament through the Moneyball Amendment Act, and this is the kind of stuff that we all need to be talking about.
I don't know whether it's an appropriate question, but it's a very interesting one. You know, our minister indicated that our economic growth has been, I think, between 47% for us to ensure that, or for us to really start combating the unemployment and poverty. Now, when you look at the forecast, when is that? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Professor. I think I've just got two issues that I just wanted to raise. One is the not one. Just to check the level of creativity in the budget process outside committees within Treasury. Just to check whether there is a lot of creativity that happens in there, or the whole budget process is consolidation of committee work, all the committees that are operating. Then number two, also I just want to be cool on the provisions of salary bills for the next coming 2 or 3 years. What informs those to the provisions for the provision that we are making for salaries of civil servants? Thanks.
Anyone else? You may respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On the first question about our economic growth forecast, I'm not going to comment at this stage. Because as the papers have spoke, there was a meeting yesterday about the new growth path. So you'll have to wait till tomorrow to see if the minister says anything in his speech about it. And then on the issue of creativity outside of committees in the budget process, I think I'm going to hand over to Raquel to address that, seeing as she's more involved in the Medium Term Expenditure Committee. Not sure if you have any comments on that. Okay, she doesn't have a comment at this stage on that. And then in terms of provision of the salary board, obviously when we table the medium term budget policy statement tomorrow, there will be a trajectory, a forecast of what we expect compensation of employees to be over the next 3 years, and then that of course will be refined for our February budget. But those numbers contain the current wage agreement. Then what we think employment growth in the public sector is going to do, inflation over the next 3 years, pay progression, so that if people through performance bonuses get to move up a notch or a level, that's included. Then also there's a little bit of extra for things like overtime, occupation-specific dispensation, night shift work, bursaries, retrenchment or retirement packages, and that sort of thing.
Thank you. Have you covered all the numbers? I hand over to Uncle Shmita. Much of a message for them. Much. I don't see the title in the front. Welcome. You can continue with your justice.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. I will take you through the adjusted estimates of national expenditure publication. This publication is rather a technical publication. It's not really a policy document. It depicts the adjustments to the appropriations that were set out in the budget in February in terms of section 52 of the PFMA. So there are only certain categories of adjustments that are permissible at this stage of the year. The publication begins with an introductory chapter. Within this chapter, there is a narrative on the summary of the adjustments. It sets out the appropriations which were tabled in the February budget. It shows the adjustments that are now being proposed and then shows the new adjusted appropriation for the current financial year. This is followed by a series of 10 summary tables. The first table shows the 2010-11 adjusted national budget. This basically shows a depiction of the budget at the time, the appropriation at the time of the budget in February, the adjustments that are being proposed, and the new adjusted appropriation for the coming financial year. This is then followed by a table which shows the adjusted appropriation for every single vote, as well as any adjustments that are proposed to direct charges against the National Revenue Fund, such as state debt costs. This is followed by a table which shows the adjusted appropriations per economic classification, that is for current payments, transfers and subsidies, payments for capital assets, and payments for financial assets. Then there is a table showing the rollovers that have been approved by the Minister of Finance. This refers to the rollover of funds from the 2019 financial year to the current year to finalise expenditure that was almost complete at the end of 2009-10. This is followed by a table which shows the unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure. That is expenditure that could not have been foreseen at the time the budget was tabled, that has been approved by the Treasury Committee. This is a subcommittee of Cabinet which met on the 28th of September to look at the request put forward by National Government Departments. After this table, there's a table showing any adjustments due to significant and unforeseeable economic and financial events that are being proposed. This is followed by a table showing self-financing expenditure proposed by national departments. This refers to
revenue that is generated by departments through the own revenue generator capability, which they then deposit into the National Revenue Fund, and now they request to access some of those funds. Any savings declared by departments are then shown in the next table, as well as projected underspending for the current year. Savings that are declared by departments lead to a reduction in their appropriation. The last two tables show the expenditure and the departmental receipts, the outcome for the previous financial year, that is 19, and the preliminary expenditure and revenue outcome for the first 6 months of this financial year. Any revised estimates of expenditure for the current year, as well as departmental receipt estimate revisions, also shown in these tables. The rest of the introductory chapter contains a guide to the information contained in each chapter, and it basically shows the layout and the format of each chapter in the publication. There is one chapter per vote. There are currently 37 votes. The national votes are ranked according to functional groupings, which are central government administration, financial and administrative services, social services, justice, crime prevention and security, and economic services and infrastructure. I will now take you through what the information contained in each vote, each chapter for each vote. It typically follows the same layout, and generally each chapter will have the same information. The chapter begins with an adjusted budget summary table. This will show the expenditure that was appropriated in February at the time of the main budget. Any decreases or increases that are being proposed now, any adjustments to the appropriation, and then it shows the result of these increases or decreases in the adjusted appropriation column. This is shown by economic classification. Also, if there are any proposed amendments to the proposed expenditure on direct charges against the National Revenue Fund, those also show. The table ends with the accountability information for each vote, which shows the executive authority of the vote, the accounting officer, and the website. After this table, the departmental aim is set out. This aim needs to be identical to the aim that is in the adjustment appropriation bill. It's typically also identical to the aim that was tabled in the appropriation bill or is contained in the Appropriation Act. It should really only change if the department's mandate, its strategic objectives, or its administrative functions change. Any changes to program purposes, objectives, and measures are then shown. Then there is a table on the mid-year performance status. At this time, the estimate of national expenditure was tabled. Each department put down certain performance targets that they were going to achieve in terms of certain indicators. Now, they have been asked to report back on what they've achieved in the first 6 months of the current financial year. Any significant changes to or any significant deviations from of what was achieved versus what was projected are then explained. Should the department or the vote have changed any of the estimates for 10-11, they will also have an explanation of that. Those should really not change unless there has been a change to the appropriation in the form of an adjustment. This table is followed by a paragraph which shows the mid-year progress, and this discusses the department's progress towards achieving its listed outcomes. Then there is a table which shows the information for the vote as a whole. So it shows the main appropriation for 10-11, then it shows the adjustment appropriation.
Can we have the meaning of aggregation?
Adjusted estimates of national expenditure. The adjustment appropriation columns, those show the adjustments that are permissible in terms of Section 32 of the PSMA. So the first column is the rollovers that have been approved by the Minister of Finance. The second column shows unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure. That is expenditure that could not have been foreseen at the time the budget was tabled. The next column shows violence and shifts. Violence refers to the utilization of the savings or under expenditure within a main division of a vote or a program towards the defrayment of excess expenditure under another program within the same vote. Whereas shifts refers to the use of the saving or under expenditure within a subdivision of a program for defrayment in another subdivision, so another sub-program or another economic classification. The other adjustments column typically shows increased function shifts, unallocated amounts that were announced by the minister in speech at the time of the main budget, adjustments due to significant, unforeseeable economic and financial events. Adjustments that the Minister of Finance has utilized Section 16 of the PSMA to effect, that is in the case of emergency, any self-financing expenditure, as well as declared savings. Similar tables are then shown for each sub-program, which has adjustments to appropriations by sub-program and economic classification. This is a new thing. We previously didn't have it in the publication, and we've included it to maintain the link between this publication and the estimates of national expenditure, which has a table for each sub-program. Then there is a narrative underneath the table which provides explanations by program for the rollovers which have been approved. So there is a sentence or two depicting what the rollover will be used for, the unforeseeable and other unavoidable expenditure, any other adjustments, gift donations and sponsorship, amounts forming a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund also shown. Then there is a table which looks at the violence and shifts. This table is essentially divided into, there is a from side and a to side. So you can see where there's the utilization of funds, where the funds are sourced from on the from side, and that's by program and economic classification. There is a motivation as to why these funds are no longer needed within that program and the amount. On the right hand side, it shows where the funding is going to be used. There is a new thing in this table is the percentage of the program budget that is being proposed to move away from this specific program. The PSMA states that a department cannot use more than 8% of a particular program. If this is more than 8%, then legislative approval is required to do this. It should be noted, though, that in working out the percentage of the program budget in this section, it adds up everything that is moving away from. But in certain instances, it could be that a program, so it's program one, there are some shifts that happen towards program one, so those need to be excluded in the calculation of the percentage when you're looking at the 8% rule for some move within the same program. Certain types of violence and shifts require either legislative approval or approval from the National Treasury before they can be effective. This is governed in terms of Section 43 of the PSMA, Section 6.3 of the Treasury Regulations, and Section 5 of the Appropriation Act. All violence and shifts which have National Treasury's approval are footnoted in this table, as well as the violence and shifts that still need legislative approval are also footnoted. The
ones that require legislative approval are typically the ones that exceed 8% of the program's budget, where more than 8% is being moved out, as well as if appropriation was marked as being specifically and exclusively appropriated in the main appropriation act, and the department is now proposing to use some of those funds for a different purpose, legislative approval is required. The next slide shows the approval that is required, the cases where approval is required from the National Treasury and from legislature respectively. Towards the end of each chapter, there are two tables, one depicting the expenditure for the previous financial year, that is the 2009-10, and the preliminary expenditure for the 10-11 financial year. This is shown by program and by economic classification. Underneath this table, there's an explanation of the expenditure trends to show whether expenditure for the first six months is in line with the budget. There is also a comparison between expenditure in the current financial year against expenditure in the previous year, and explanations are given for any significant changes. Of note here is where functions have shifted between votes, or new votes have been created subsequent to the publication of the 2009 adjusted estimates of national expenditure, the information may not be strictly comparable. A similar table is then shown for the departmental receipts. Each chapter then ends with three tables, but the tables only appear in chapters or in both where there have been changes. And these tables show the changes to transfers and subsidies and conditional grants to provinces and to local governments. The adjusted estimates of national expenditure publication forms the object to the 2010 Adjustments Appropriation Bill. The bill will also be tabled at the same time. It provides for the appropriation of money from the National Revenue Fund in terms of Section 213 of the Constitution and Section 30 of the PFMA. The bill will set out the adjustments to allocations in a similar format that the appropriation bill was tabled by vote and in main division within a vote or by program. Spending in terms of the bill is subject to the PFMA and the provisions of the bill itself, and it is a key tool for oversight and management. The bill is divided by votes and main division within a vote, and aim is set out for each vote. Identical to the Appropriation Act, adjustments to allocations are divided into current payments, transfers and subsidies, payments for capital assets and payments for financial assets. Headings group some of the listed items. Allocations marked with an asterisk refer to specifically and exclusively appropriated amounts. Those are amounts that can only be used for the specific purpose that has been put down. Conditional grants are all specifically and exclusively appropriated.
Thank you, Ferreira. On the members, I've been notified tea and coffee, etc. is ready. We're going to break for 5 to 11, but we'll be back at 10 past 11 at the latest. And then take the questions and we'll continue. There's a proposal for 11. Can we start at 11? Agreed? Thank you. Just quickly for tea and coffee.
the whole program. The program, the program, the
Thank you. Members, can we start?
any questions you want to put to Ms. Ferreira, introduce yourself, that you note the names, please, and then you can carry on with your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Magdalene. My question is on page 13 or slide 13, government for chief. As a person needs to understand the indicators that you use, they are going to assist me, which leads you to say if 8% is allocated or is being approved by the legislature for a particular program, and for some other reason, you need to do the government or the state. Now, and the seat of that is based on economic classification. That you are saying. Now, what is this tool that you use? What is the exact tool that measures that? Which makes it to say, okay, fine, see, this department does qualify for the betterment or for the fifth. After they have used over and above the 8% that has been particularly allocated to that program.
Thank you, Chair. Just on page 22, the last item, the conditional grant are specifically and exclusively appropriated, you know, that's fine, we know that. But now we've run into a problem the other day where they overspent on their budget. So the conditional grant was just kept in the bank. They didn't spend it. So, you know, is that permissible, and does Treasury do something about that? And do Treasury check what are the money spent on specific municipalities? You get a report back, but what is the detail of that report? Anyone else? That's back. Just introduce yourself, please.
Leonard Samasakan is my name. I'm in the Appropriation Committee. Chair, I just want to ask the first question I want to ask the presenter is the treasurer. We battle now and then to understand how the definition, how the unforeseen is defined. The unforeseen and unanticipated expenditure that becomes the norm of budgeting, the world budgeting. Now, I just want to understand the exact definition. How do you define something that was not anticipated in the budget? For example, given the department, all the departments know what they do and how elastic their strategic plans are. So if you could explain that. And the second question, which is obviously associated to that, is my understanding is that once the budget is passed, it's passed to the Senate office based on the budget book. Now, I just want to know if you could show us in terms of both in terms of the Money Act as well as the CMSA, which section of it of those acts that empowers either Treasury or beyond the threshold of 8% that is required in terms of the CMSA, that then empowers to basically shift to appropriate otherwise other than what has been appropriated in the main budget. And the third question is this what is this exact litmus test that we apply in the motivation of the rollover? You know, it's the department submits a list of what they wish to be rolled over, and then later the treasury determines that X can only be rolled over. What is the measure, this yardstick that is applied, we could at least have something like that so that we understand the rollover, including
what is the measurement, how do you measure it, how do you agree to it, whether it's something that is just based on the good relationship between those who request and sometimes those who meet with us. So what is this objective, scientific, the measure that we use, the lesson test that we use? If you could explain that. But I think the issue about the unforeseen and the definition and all that is something that we want, I would like to see on paper, in order that you are able to measure what is called unforeseen. From where I'm sitting, I thought that term will vanish from the budgeting. But it's just a moving target, the unforeseen definition. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we are having a problem with this bio-bank issue because the committees know right from the beginning that they are going to do a bio-bank. And the fact that this 8% is for the program, so each and every program can be biased. The national treasury actually seems to be, according to us, and when we speak with the department, to be actually encouraging this thing. Because they initially tell us that, no, we'll apply for environment. When we ask them, why don't you spend, then they say we'll apply for environment. And the worst part of it was when we were sitting with treasury and a certain department, I know the committee can remember, a staff from National Treasury actually said to the department that they should apply for a rollover. When we were sitting there, we were busy discouraging these things, and the staff from Treasury advises a department to apply for a rollover. And then we ask ourselves, what is our role as a parliament? And it comes to the question where that on slide 16, I was going to discuss it. All biomass and fish which have national treasury's approval or which can only be approved by the legislature noted. I think the latter part of it doesn't apply because they confidently come to us and tell us that national treasury will approve. So I think we are really not happy about it might be within your legal right, but it affects service delivery because you want to see the policies of government being implemented. But when one arm is holding us back, because here are these people who should be implementing, and they are voting for us, that we are going to get it. And a staff member from a national center advises them in front of us to apply for a role over. It's really on track when we want to achieve our goals. Thank you.
That's when the quarterly reports of departments are very important to monitor that process. Omba Mashile?
Yeah, Chair. Also, I was of the opinion as well that this monthly report and quarterly reports are meant to actually monitor the expenditures. But then, when you have a vast methods and ways of actually trying to hide understanding and taking this role over, it becomes a bit of a problem. But Chair, my really major question, of course, is in relation to the use of this word savings by government. I know sometimes there were certain explanations about money allocated to buy capital products. They ended up getting cheaper than they intended to be a saving. But there is a lot that is being hidden in there, which is just pure understanding and suspension of service delivery. And I'm not sure how we can really get over this particular problem of talking about savings. And also, just Chair, to these issues of violence. And I don't know how correct are these treasury regulations in relation to this violence. When we have this money now in place, because irrespective that the amount of money is budgeted in the same program is shifted from one corner of the program to the other, but it's a change of the budget, as far as I'm concerned, because changing money funds from buying antiretrovirus, then to use it on the management of that, and arguing that it is in the same program, we can do that. I mean, those kinds of things really, they are very problematic to us. And I think we definitely need to ensure that these federal regulations in terms of approving budgets and the rest, in relation to the money being spent, whether these things are in that check. The last thing I just wanted to check was the recent performance agreements of the president and the ministers in relation to the drafting of this particular document, whether there is any implication that this current document has now to be adjusted in terms of the outcome.
Thank you, Honorable Shida, Honorable Leila.
Thank you very much, sir. I just want to find out from NG whether they have a monitoring barometer in terms of corruption, and at what stage do you monitor and find that there is corruption in some of the votes, and also whether you have a monitoring tool for the packed funds which you can use immediately so that they don't stay on in the budget until it is late. Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
So nice to see this I don't know whether National Treasury, I think that they think that this is August and this is October. I see this workshop is led by women only. I don't know what happened to us, but it's National Treasury. Just a comment one would like to make, and many of the questions revolve around the revolve around this issue of environment and shifting of funds. The previous slide, I mean the previous presentation, I saw it at the top. It was talking about credibility of the budget. And so from what the members have said, it's clear that the experience that as appropriation we have, you look at the first quarterly report of National Treasury, the funds have already been shifted at the first quarter. Now, the question that we are raising, and I think that that's what my colleagues are raising, is the credibility of this budget. We suspect that National Federal, for instance, should be coming with the rules that say this environment and shifting of funds can be allowed. But at some stage, it's difficult if people, we approve, the budget is approved at the end of June, by June, we approve the budget. But by that time, it has already, funds have already been shifted. So I'm saying now, it raises the question of credibility. And we don't know. In terms of the TFSA, Treasury has a role to monitor the implementation of this budget. To what extent are they doing that? And I want to agree with Comrade Mashile there that the and other comrades that have raised the question that the issue of the in this presentation the areas that where the legislator is supposed to approve, it includes amongst other requirements environmental ship utilized statements of fund appropriated for items specifically and exclusively earmarked in the Appropriation Act. Matter of affairs, this must be approved, supposed to be approved by the legislature. But in reality, Commissioner Shiro is correct. Somewhere there's a line at the end that says subject to the approval of National Treasurer. And that also appears in the rule. You see, now, if you challenge the department, they tell you that no, National Treasurer has approved it anyway. So now it puts us into a conflictual situation. We think that maybe we need to clarify the act really tightly so that it's clear what is exactly that National Treasurer can approve, what is exactly that would have to wait for the legislature to approve. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Ferrari, you may respond.
Thank you. Perhaps I can begin with the questions pertaining to the biomass and ship. We've tried to put as much information in the biomass and ship table to empower you to look at the motivations put through by the department and to see whether you think it is credible that they should be moving funds to those particular items. We, by the ship, that comes through to the National Treasury for approval. We scrutinize those violence and ships and attempt to apply all the rules to only approve the ones that are legitimately should be approved. In certain instances, violence and ships do play a key role in the sense that it's difficult to anticipate at the beginning of the year when the budget is tabled exactly where the funds will be spent. But that is that should not be a general case that at the beginning of the year you're budgeting certain programs and then you shift everything around. That should be in minimal cases that happens. On behalf of my colleague at the National Treasury, we shouldn't be encouraging violence and shifts if it's not for legitimate cases. Each case should be scrutinized on an individual basis and the merits of the case should be looked at. I'm not sure what happened in that particular case. I don't know the the surrounding circumstances. I can't really comment on this particular case. In terms of the footnotes on that table, we implemented those footnotes that were not previously there in the previous publication. And we thought it was important so that you could see which violence specifically require your approval. That would be when they exceed 8% of the program and the ones that are specifically and exclusively appropriated. And to show you when the National Treasury has also approved specific violence. But as I say, it's key to look at the motivations in that column. It's by program, by economic classification. And you can also look at the adjustments appropriation law and look at them together and see where they're proposing to move the funds to. In terms of the definition of unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, the Treasury regulations do set out, do have a bit more than the PFMA as to what can be considered unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure. It's typically expenditure that could not be foreseen at the time of budget, at the time of the budget. It should be either unforeseen or unavoidable, and it should not be merely due to price increases that have occurred subsequent to the table of the budget. So a typical example of some
something that is unforeseen and unavoidable is due to natural disasters. If there is a flood and we need to repair a road urgently, that fits the definition of what is unforeseeable and unavoidable. But it should not have been foreseen at the time of the budget or at the time the estimates of national expenditure were being proposed. Then the motivations in terms of the rollover project, the Treasury guidelines also stipulate certain types of rollovers which may not be approved, such as you're not allowed to roll over more than 5% of your goods and services budget, you cannot roll over funds that were budgeted for the compensation of employees, etc. The departments typically send in requests to the National Treasury. The National Treasury then looks at these requests and applies the rules in terms of the Treasury regulations, and then adjudicates whether or not they fit the definition of what a rollover should be. But it should typically be to finish a project that was in progress, and that if you delay the progress, going to impact service delivery, but it should be something that is almost complete at the end of the year and due to unforeseen circumstances takes a month or two into the new financial year to complete. In terms of the implication of the delivery agreement, we have changed the performance table. The table under A, if you look at the estimates of national expenditure, there was not a column there for outcomes. Now a column has been added to each of these tables, which shows the outcome related to the particular indicator. In terms of the use of the term underspending versus saving, we are aware of the distinction and we try and use the term saving when it's a genuine saving. For instance, when there are gains due to the foreign exchange rate in different things that savings, otherwise we try and use the term understanding. In terms of the monitoring of corruption, I don't think the best official within the National Treasury to comment on that because it's not within my area. In terms of the conditional grants and the overspending of municipalities, I think I'll give that over to my colleague who works in the Intergovernmental Relations Unit, and she can give you a better answer than I.
Thank you. With regard to local government conditional grants, we do from National Treasury side get information from all the national transferring offices on a monthly basis on the actual expenditure, and on a quarterly basis we also get from the national transferring offices a quarterly report that also contains performance expenditure. What also happens is that if we notice that there's underspending taking place on a program, we can delay transfers. If it's underspending, and we can also follow up with the department's concerns. But the particularly important is that this is where the committees also play a very important role. Because what we also do is provide the information, and that information can then be used by particularly these committees as well that look at financial issues and actually ask transferring departments, why are you underspending? Because the issue is not pointed out. There is actual needs, or there are actual needs on the ground, but the department's got the money, but they're not spending it. And who's suffering in the end of the day is actually the people on the ground. Then it turns into requests for virulent rollovers and the budget. But just to indicate, that question was also asked, how do you deal with the allocation, a conditional grant allocation that goes to local government? The national department hasn't got the flexibility to actually take that money away from municipalities without a very specific processing policy. Because in addition to the PFMA, then the requirements of the Division of Revenue Act actually kicks into place. And a municipality must first be consulted before an allocation may be reduced. For example, it has happened in the past where a municipality, in terms of aid projects where they put in their applications, they're not ready to spend. And there's another municipality that are actually far advanced in their project, so that allocations can be shifted between municipalities. And again, it has been an issue that's been raised by this committee as well. And again, this is where these committees and your committees can play a very important role to actually ask the department to account on why are they doing these things. Because it's often a case that the national departments are not planning that well. And when they determine the allocations, it's not really supported by an excellent signature program.
Ms. Ferreira, are you done with your reply? Because I see the hands going up again. I've noted 1, 2, 3, 4 on the machine. I'll start with you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Remember your number 3 and 4.
Yeah, thanks, Jefferson. I just want this clarity. The statements that I've heard from Treasury that they cannot comment on being able to pick up fraudulent expenditures and the rest of corruption from Treasury, I'm a little bit worried, because surely if they are monitoring the expenditures as they come through, it should be possible to pick up some mysterious expenditures that are not possible under normal circumstances, that people must be able to rise up to those particular things. But now, I heard that if she said no, she's not going to comment on that, or she doesn't believe that somebody's president can comment on that, or it's not within their mandate, or something like that. I'll have a problem with that if they can share. So, financial management should be able to also give you an indication when things are not going right in terms of digitalization of funds. It should be possible.
Also a question that we can take forward to the briefing on Thursday when we interact with the minister, but when you read the app, what is a generous report on a department, and you get the sentence, no supporting documents, then there's a snake in the grass. So we can't say there's a slung in the grass. So then you'll have to zoom in on that.
Thank you very much, Jay. Honourable Mashile has already asked the question that I wanted to ask. Thank you very much.
All right, brilliant. Number 3 and number 4, Mr. Makubela, you are number 4.
Okay. Now, Sir Northern, I didn't quite get an answer to the question I asked. Well, I don't know what it's about in different categories. Let me put it differently. I was asking the question in relation to who has the power to appropriate the budget? And I said, I assume that I understand it is Parliament that appropriates the budget. But when it comes to in between the time when the budget is appropriated and when the budget is spent, who decides that the budget as approved by Parliament should now be spent differently? Where is the power in the contain, in the, if I ask what is specific, for example, this issue of savings versus or shift of environment. Some of the money that is shifted is money that earmarked for program that Parliament has approved for that to be implemented. So that's what I'm asking. Is a provision that empowers, or is it in the regulation? Because if there is something like that, then certainly as Parliament we need to look at it, that there is a problem in terms of, because otherwise what is determined as program is not real program, because it will be just changed halfway based on what the department feels that they are unable to do X, Y, Z, which is also a mystery. Because there's 5 years, there's 3 year planning, there's a cycle, there's 1 year, there's 5 year strategic plan, there's 1 year strategic plan in terms of the implementation. So So that's, again, so I'm asking just a question about the power, because I think that is important. Because if there is a contradiction, because my understanding is that the actual scent is appropriated by power. When you change it, is it not the responsibility of Parliament? If not, has the Parliament devolved certain functions on its behalf for that to be changed halfway, and where is it contained in there? That's all I wanted to ask, I was asking, and that question was not given. But I perhaps it is not possible that it's given now because of time. Could we get something in writing? Could we get something in writing, including this issue about disaster? I accept that the disaster would fall within the category of unforeseen. But that's all that example that has been made. But if you pick up a budget book and you look at the unforeseen expenditure, you see that that's not necessarily talking about the disaster. There are other things that are contained in the unforeseen, which has been approved by the Treasury, which has been accepted as unforeseen. Which, where I'm sitting, I'm saying it can't be unforeseen. It does not fall within that. It's part of planning, for management planning within the budget that to address that particular issue. So that's why I'm asking this thing, where they are written, so that as we look at the appropriate commission, we look at the budget, and we talk to the department, we call them for hearing, we can then interact based on the information that is empowered by Treasury to understand this thing a little bit much better. Otherwise, we really just been taken for it on a trip by department in this discussion.
Thanks, Chairman. Mine is a follow-up in connection with the rollover. Let's say the project is in first phase and second phase. In this financial year, in the first phase, the money is not utilized or spent, and then up for rollover. And then in the new financial year, we are looking now at the second phase. Now we have to budget that money for the second phase. And won't it be encouraged the non-spending or low spending of the budget? How can or what can be done by the Treasury in order to discourage this type of thing? And secondly, in the environment, you find that a person, you buy you do this or environment to in order to fund another project. You see that in this project you are sometimes you can't do that. You ask that that environment. Don't you consider also the tendency of a particular department doing such type of thing? Think that no, you will do the environment in order to utilize the money for another project.
Thank you, Wendell Macabella. We are joined by the Secretary of the NCP, Edward Pandela. Welcome. Anyone else? You may respond.
The question on who appropriates the budget, Parliament appropriates the budget, in terms of the adjustments that are made in terms of Section 32 of the PFMA. The environment legislation is contained in Section 43 of the PFMA that needs to be read in conjunction with Section 6.3, I think it is, of the Treasury regulation, and also in terms of Section 5 of the Appropriation Act, which gives the Minister of Finance powers to approve violence in certain cases. In terms of approving the rollovers, the Minister of Finance approved those rollovers in terms of Section 6 of the Appropriation Act, which empowers the Minister of Finance to approve expenditure before an adjustment budget is passed, limited to the amount in the contingency reserve. So there's certain provisions there that limit the minister.
administrative powers. In terms of unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure, Section 52B of the PFMA empowers the Treasury Committee to approve that expenditure. The rest of the expenditure there is Parliament's right to approve or decline those appropriations. In terms of the definition of unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure, the Treasury guidelines just set out three elements of the definition. They say it's expenditure that was not known at the time of the budget that meets the criteria of being unforeseen and unavoidable, but it does not elaborate more on what is the exact definition. And it states that it's not expenditure that's due to price or tariff increases. So that's the only thing that is in the specific guidelines. Okay. I don't know if that question is now.
The members are your coverage? Let me take forward to the briefing when we interact with the Minister and Treasury. Honourable Shabani, you've got hold of the PFMA there?
No, I wanted to suggest that in the interest of time, let's move on. But clearly, the Standing Committee on Appropriation has had a workshop with the Treasurer, specifically with Section 43. And clearly, there has not been proper agreement. And I think that from our side, we want to propose some clarity of this Act. Because the Act is very clear in terms of what is it that can be shifted around and not shifted around. But the problem arises in the application of this Act, where we think that sometimes Treasury themselves have not what we call the compliance. Sometimes we think that it's not compliant with this. Because if, from what has been said in terms of defining this, it would be very easy, we would all walk out and understand what has been said. But when it comes to application of it, as Honorable Ramakrabana and other members were raising, that's where the feeling is that something needs to be done. Because sometimes it's not natural, but this regulation of saying, subject to approval of national treasure, it really becomes a blanket of on areas where the Act says for capital is specifically what we call the identified item, conditional grant, you may not what we call a shift those. But national treasure what we call approved those things. That's where we say the problem arises in the application of this. But that's why we're in suggestion that let's move on. But it's clear that it's something that we should continue engaging with.
We do, sir. Thank you, all the members. That brings us to the last presentation, the Division of Revenue. Wendy, are you ready?
Thank you very much, Mr. Okay, okay, this is the first time that we've actually got a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. In the past, there was no such requirement. We just have the Division of Revenue Act, and then in November, December, based on what was appropriate in terms of the Appropriation Act, the Minister of Finance then released a government gazette in which the amendment to allocation to provinces and local government was contained. In terms of the Act now we've got, the Money Available Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, which now requires, in addition to the Appropriation Amendment Bill, also a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. What will happen for the first time is the Act, or the clauses that actually contain the conditions for transfer both to provinces and local governments, that will not change. The only thing that will change is actually the schedules attached to the Act, which it's got a number of schedules, and I'll quickly take you through the schedules. What Schedule 1 does is it contains what is the allocation to national government, what is the allocation in terms of the provincial equitable share, and what's the allocation to the local government equitable share. In the national allocation, because it's conditional grants, the national allocation also contains the provincial conditional grants and the local government conditional grants. So Schedule 2 is just a pure provincial equitable share, and a Schedule 3 is just the local government allocation. And if you look at Schedule 2, this is the provincial equitable share allocation that is determined in terms of a formula. So if there's an additional money made available through the equitable share to provinces, this is where you will find the money. For example, some of the things that will require change to a provincial equitable share is, for example, a salary adjustment, a certain inflation amount is assumed, that will be the salary increase in year, and then through the negotiation process, that is then higher than the amount, and that will mean that provinces wouldn't have budgeted for that amount, and that's one of the types of allocations that will go through the adjustment allocation. Schedule 3 contains the allocations through the local government equitable share, and for example, last year and the year before, adjustment allocations were made to the local government equitable share to cater for Eskom's bulk price increase. Because when the budget was determined then in February, the Eskom bulk price increase wasn't known, and in order for municipalities to ensure that they could maintain their service delivery to the poor and still provide free basic electricity at the same level, and adjustment allocations were made available. Then a Schedule 4 allocation is a very specific allocation as well. That is where allocations are made to provinces and municipalities. The national government just partly contributes to that allocation. And a very good example is the main infrastructure grants that go to provinces and municipalities. The infrastructure grants to provinces and the municipal infrastructure grants in terms of municipalities. And this is where the grant is put in place to ensure that the right type of behaviours are secured, and one of the things that then the municipality or the province does, they use their own resources then to substantially top up that allocation. In some cases more than others, and in other cases quite substantial, like in the case of metros. The municipal infrastructure grant makes up 10% in certain cases of the allocation of the overall infrastructure spending that's done by municipality. Then Schedule 5 and Schedule 6 is very similar. Schedule 5 is for provinces and Schedule 6 is for municipalities. That's where the grant mainly funds a certain objective that national government sets, and where the province or the municipality, although they can contribute their own funds, it's very limited. Then the Schedule 7 is a very important allocation, and it's one this can also be touched by the adjustment process. Schedule 7 is where an allocation in kind is made. So the municipality, it doesn't go to provinces, it just goes to municipalities, is when national retains the money and spends the money on behalf of a municipality. And a good example of that would be in the case of the Department of Water Affairs, where they've got a number of in-kind transfers, for example, bulk infrastructure, overstretches a number of municipal boundaries, where they will then put in place the infrastructure, and eventually that asset gets transferred to the municipality concerned. And then in Schedule 8 grants is where allocations are made available for EPW programs, where if a municipality or province meets the target, it then receives an allocation to actually serve to stimulate job creation. So these schedules will change if there's adjustments made, and they will remain the same if no adjustments are made through the adjustment process. Okay, this just highlights how allocations can be amended, and I've taken you through quite a few of those. The unconditional and conditional allocations to provinces and municipalities can change, and it can be because of disasters, it can be because of new programs being introduced that wasn't known when the budget was released. and it also can provide for rollovers of condition allocations and payments. To give a good example, some of the grants that you currently get in the system are interrelated and interlinked. You get a water operation transfer that goes to municipalities directly, a Schedule 6 grant, but there's also money on the National Department of Water Affairs budget for water transfers as well, the same subsidy. And then as the water scheme gets transferred to the municipality, the funds need to convert from a Schedule 7 grant or an in-kind grant to be transferred directly to the municipality, then it becomes a Schedule 6 grant. And that also needs to be catered through the adjustment process. The idea is eventually to get all the money as a Schedule 6 and then later on to incorporate it into the equitable share. And that's it.
Short and sweet. Questions? Anyone else? Yeah. Sure. I'll let you. The DA is going to take caucus.
Is DA allowed to call
it? Well, that's just a joke. Anyone else for questions on the machine?
I think I just need a little bit of clarity on the very last sentence of the presentation. Because I'm worried about the implication of that particular last sentence. What is in terms of our work as Parliament, when you have a sentence that says the reallocation of conditional allocations that were not correctly reflected in the schedules of the Division of Revenue Act, which is something that we have passed. But then somebody says, no, there's something wrong with that. And I'm just worried, I just want to understand exactly what is meant there. And does it mean that when we sit with the Division of Revenue and then the health provinces apply their minds and all these things, but then we can have this kind of a situation arise in sense?
Anyone else? Thank you.
In terms of Schedule 8, it's a comment actually that which is related to Schedule 8, which is about incentives to provinces and municipalities. What comes to mind that we've got the PCWP program, which is hugely understanding. Now, they have to ask for rollover, they have to approve rollover, and then another budget, the next day we approve the budget. And something that we know that it's not pending. So I think that maybe it will be a good thing if really there is some, we find some ways of improving on that project grant, so that it's not difficult for Parliament to approve the rollover on something that we know that there's a huge, what we call the understanding. It's the intention of the incentive is a good one, job creation and what. But somehow what needs to be investigated, not only by the department that is responsible for the incentive, but with the support of National Treasury, to say, how do you improve the expenditure? Because clearly, I think the problem there lies on the on how that incentive is, on how they deal with the incentive. So that's a comment that I wanted to make.
How do we get to quality spending on priorities? Wendy, respond.
Thank you very much. To give an example, and it's a nice controversial and the issue of incorrect allocation. It is not a good thing, but I think there could be cases, particularly when municipalities, it's not in the case of provinces, but there's 283 municipalities, and there have been cases where a national department confuses a municipality with another one, where the names are either the same or very similar. We've had cases like that in the past. And when the schedules get gazetted, then they come to us and say, we gave it to the wrong municipality. If it does happen, it's not a good thing. And I think it is important that those issues are very transparent and also submitted to the committee, so the committees are aware of that. But it is really a pure case where a municipality was never on the list. A project is not necessarily even appropriate to them. It's just an administrative error. When something like that can happen. So what will happen if it's not corrected, then the money won't get spent at all. Because, for example, there could be cases where a specific municipality has been identified and they're ready for this expenditure, but then the Division of Revenue comes out and allocations are deleted, they've got no allocation. And another municipality suddenly gets an allocation what they haven't planned for. And it's purely because of an administrative error. And I think what we need to do in future as well is, and that is one of the issues, in addition to municipalities being listed by province, there's also a municipal demarcation code. So these errors should, in actual fact, not really happen, but they do happen. Then with regards to the EPWP incentive grant and the understanding of the EPWP incentive grant. And I think, again, the other committees can actually play a very important role. How a grant gets spent and allocated is largely contained not just in the Division of Revenue Act, but also the conditional grant framework. And the issue is, how do you get it right so that you've got sufficient controls in place to ensure that the money gets spent on the right thing? But you also don't make it so onerous that, on the other hand, you get 100% correct spending, but you don't get the money released because provinces and municipalities just completely struggle to actually access that money. And it could be most probably something that the EPW and Centre of France need to be looked at. The concerns that you do get from provinces and municipalities, it's very difficult to actually comply. The department or the transferring department should say it's not. And it's good to get that done in trust. Because you also do not want to release money easier and then it doesn't get spent on the right thing. It's really that balance. And then how do you ensure quality spending? That is a very important question. You won't necessarily pick that up without national transferring offices also taking the expenditure very seriously and looking at norms and standards on what should actually be spent per project. For example, if you've got a national school nutrition program and you can actually cost, this is, you can spend X amount of rand and one kid could have a very small meal and another province can spend the same amount of money and actually give a quality meal. So just looking at expenditure, you want to pick it up. And that is where non-financial information is very critical to actually ensure that quality expenditure does take place. You won't start to pick that up just in the purely the transfers that's made. You need that more detailed information. What we also do in the conditional grant framework every year is we don't just release the financial information, we also release the non-financial information. And we don't just take any information. It's a bit of a time lag, unfortunately, because we just take information that we get from the national transferring offices. It will be black sheets. So we just use audited information as contained in the annual financial report to ensure that the information that we put through is credible.
Thank you, Mr. Swanu. Mr. Kumalo, any remarks from your side, MSC?
No, not at this particular point.
Not at this particular point. Honorable Mashile.
The
Yeah, Chair, I think the kind of explanation that one has received on this last sentence I was referring to actually requires that this sentence must be redrafted. Because this sentence actually says that we approve the division of revenue, thinking that the figures are correct, but only to find that no, we have actually, the provinces approve the division of revenue without amendment, whereas there are erroneous figures in there. And I think this is problematic. If it's administrative, then I think it must be kept just in an administrative mess. That doesn't actually implicate NCOP approving a division of revenue, which is actually having mistakes in. And I think that is the one thing that I just wanted to do, because I could feel a lot of on me in the NCOP.
On the Chinese?
No, Chair, I think my slight difference to what Honorable Nasheed is saying, because my understanding of the entire section, those are conditions under which amendments can be made. It does not necessarily say every year there will be such administrative mistakes. In case there is that kind of a mistake, then there should be that provision for those amendments. But it does not say, like the one that you adopted, this year it will have those mistakes, next year it will have those mistakes, as all of us see it to be. I really see no harm in having such a statement there, because it's there to accommodate those administrative mistakes. These things are drafted by human beings who try their best to present correct figures, but there's no foolproof that it won't be.
Anyone else? None. Good morning.
Now, sir, I think that Honorable Masiga understands you to be saying that government employs people are highly paid to do this with all the kind of infrastructure to deal with it. In a situation where it happens in one province, I can mention it. The allocation is meant to be 30 million. But it's written 300 million. Do you understand the implications of that? It's because of 270 million. So, it's true, it's correct that those mistakes can be made, but the intention is really that, I think that what is being said is that there's supposed to be people who deal with, who foolproof, who edit this thing. So, but if it slips, you know, then it means that somebody is not doing his or her work, because it can have disastrous, what they call the implications. If you, National Treasury thinks that it's transferring 300 million, well, they have written that they're transferring three billion. The province that side is what is looking for the 3 billion, which is not in the books or is there. It's important that people should take their work really seriously. I think that's what it's being said.
Thank you, Honorable Shikoni. Wendy refers to municipalities with the same names, like Pixley Pashemi. Yeah, we've got that in the Northern Cape, and I think in Eastern Cape there's also such a municipality. So it's also things that we must look at. Honorable Spita, any remarks from your side, Mr. Chairman?
One announcement for finance committee. We now have a first draft of our BRR report. We will be adopting that report on Thursday. If honorable members can take those documents and read them thoroughly, so that on Thursday we have a rich debate on the matter before we conclude.
Thank you. I see Honorable Gelderbloem is making his hands like that. He needs copies. So the secretary, Mr. Bradley Viljoen, will assist to get these copies to the members. Honorable members, no, thank you. We are the financial family as we sit here, as a collective of all committees. And the workshop like this also sharpens ourselves. to do our work better. Thank you for the presentation. We see each other then tomorrow morning in the lock-up session in EC249 at 10 o'clock until 14 hours. After that, we'll go to the house to listen to the Minister of Finance. Thanks for your input. This house is adjourned.